Over the weekend, I watched the Germany soccer team play live. The weird thing about it, though, there was nobody in the audience. It was just them playing on the field.
Well, I think some of the team sports, obviously, is going to be weird. I saw there was a little bit of golf on TV yesterday, so that was kind of interesting. Although they don't let you talk during golf matches anyway. So, like, how different can it be?
Daytona 500, they ran their race yesterday with no audience.
You're driving a race car. It's like, does it matter if people are in the stands? It's not like you have a chance to look around. If you have a wreck, do they just help you virtually? How does that work?
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to Touchpoint. This is episode 172. Reed Smith, Chris Boyer, back for another week.
Hello, Reed. It's springtime here, and we're starting to all get the urge around the country to kind of break out of staying at home, aren't we?
I've been staring out this window now, much like everyone else. Since we've moved to Nashville, this is really the first time I've spent really any time in our home office. And so I'm getting a better understanding of what happens in the neighborhood. Like the same people walk by at the same time every day. Maybe I'm in the Truman Show. People that remember that. It's like the same people walk by at the same time every day. I'm starting to see things. But everything's well. Starting a phased back approach to life is normal. I don't know that that's even a thing. New normal will be interesting. Speaking of the new normal, that is also one of our newest shows. Speaking of shows, we have other shows on the network besides the one that you're listening to. So if you'd like to know more about those, including The New Normal, which is Chris's new series, talking to some of the smartest minds in healthcare about what that's going to look like going forward, you can find out more about that, this show, and all the others over at touchpoint.health. Love our sponsors. Go over there, check it out, and maybe subscribe to a new show. Check out some new episodes of something that you previously have not. Thanks again for listening. Thanks again for telling a friend. Number one way that you can help us out is still just word of mouth. So we really, really appreciate that. Take a brief pause here. We'll be right back with today's show. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you.
So we were talking about the new normal prior to the show, and not our podcast, but just whatever that new normal would be as we're phasing into it. And one of the things that's really been top of mind to many of us that are professionals in the industry is, what does it look like for us to now network and interact with others in our industry in this world that we're in today? And it's a really challenging thought to think about, isn't it?
I've thought so much. It's funny because I haven't thought a lot about this other than conferences, which we'll get to later. But most of the time when you're thinking about the new normal and kind of what's next and those types of things, I'm thinking about it through the lens of the clients I serve. So healthcare delivery, for example, what that new normal looks like, telehealth, telemedicine, et cetera. But I think there's, to your point, a new normal around the way that we network and communicate and participate as people that work in this space.
It's not surprising. I mean, if you think about telemedicine and interacting with patients online, digitally, remotely, virtually, that sort of thing, those same challenges exist for us in a professional networking sense as well. So we're almost facing the same things our hospital clients face, is how do we keep continuing to have that trust? How do we keep having a conversation? Zoom calls are not the only thing that's going to do it. Don't get me wrong. I like my Zoom virtual happy hours with my friends and family and things like that. But there are so many other ways that we can kind of leverage where we're at today and where we're going to be in the short-term future to enhance our networking and make sure that we're keeping that professional connectivity that we so desperately want.
Yeah, and so let's talk about a few of the things that we use to do that. And not that we didn't use these previously, but it's really amplified, obviously, much like telehealth has on the care delivery side of the equation. You just mentioned Zoom. So there's like the Zoom, Skype, GoToMeeting, WebEx type space. Speaking of, as a side, can we, because you mentioned Zoom happy hours, which I think are great. Can someone invent the way that you can have sidebar conversations in those things? Because you don't go to a happy hour and talk to 45 people at the same time. Like, you know, you don't go around and everybody takes a turn talking. Like, how would you do that? You know, where you could have like, you know, you click on like four people and like you start a dialogue over here and you can still see everybody, but you can't hear everybody. Anyway, just a feature idea if anybody's listening. So,
well, I think one thing too that's a challenge that I found with Zoom and Hangouts and Skype like that is that if you're having these conversations with people, if you're the person talking, suddenly the camera prioritizes you in front of everybody else. I've read some articles about the sort of concept that when you're in a Zoom call, you're always being watched and you're always, at any given point in time you make a noise, you're front and center of everybody. Even when you're in a boardroom and maybe you're sitting with about 10 or 15 other people, I sometimes lean over to the person next to me and make a little comment under my breath. How do we do that in today's world? Do we have to like text message each other now while we're on Zoom calls? I don't know.
They're useful tools, obviously. And I think we'll continue to see features change, evolve, develop, you know, based on the fact that, you know, people are using them more and are going to have more feedback. What's another kind of category past the WebEx type platform?
Well, I'm surprised you didn't mention this at first, right? The LinkedIn direct messaging, right, Reed? I mean, yes. Those solicitations. LinkedIn, in general, is a great place for professional networking, putting aside the people that use those sponsored LinkedIn messages to get at us and ask us if they can be helpful to us when they don't even read our profiles. But I think LinkedIn in general is a very powerful tool in order for you to connect with people in your industry and also get a sense as to what's happening in the industry, because people still use that platform as a way to publish relevant articles, thoughts that they're having, et cetera.
I think so. So, I mean, think about that for a second. So you got the direct messaging piece, but like you said, LinkedIn as a whole. So great way to stay connected, navigating around, commenting on other people's content and posts and things like that. Certainly starting up conversations. There's obviously the groups functionality, things like that. I think we'll continue to see expand or become maybe more utilized. But good grief with the direct messaging. I mean, seriously, I can't. We don't even need to get into that right now, but it is an opportunity. Another one kind of along the same line, staying in the social media space, one that's been around for some years that you and I both have quite a bit of experience with is tweet chats. You know, we've got a couple of good friends that run the Healthcare Leader tweet chat, HCLDR hashtag on Tuesday nights. I actually got to guest host one here recently. That's still a great way to stay connected to a community or a group of people of similar interests. And so those could be scheduled. They could be impromptu.
And an extension of that is also live streaming, like events or discussions. And I've seen a fair number of organizations get into these kind of live streaming where they're having conferences. And again, LinkedIn has that capability now to do LinkedIn Live, where you're streaming video and you can have conversations. And, you know, there's a variety of others. We'll talk about the more structured way to do that, but sort of more of these impromptu video conversations too is a great way to connect. One of the most important things that we can have is actually having that direct connection, personalized connection with our friends, calling them up, maybe sending them text messages. Or if you're a business and you have a large client portfolio, leveraging your marketing automation and your CRM to continue to communicate with them, again, we're not saying use this as a way to promote or advertise or what have you, but just to have a touch point, a connection with them.
Online communities, that means a lot of things. You've got kind of your friends and family world, I guess, but there's other opportunities. Like, what comes to mind there?
Again, this is kind of all interrelated now because these tools kind of mesh together. But LinkedIn has these abilities where you create these groups. You can kind of have conversations that are threaded. I also think about like Shishmid has a really great messaging platform or messaging board.
And then the Mayo Clinic social media network, very similar messaging platform, ways to start threaded discussions around different topics and that type thing. Barrel Institute's another one, obviously focused on patient experience. Very similar message board type situation. So I think, again, those are interesting opportunities. Certainly there's ones that exist. You know, we're speaking from kind of where we sit in the world, but there's obviously a lot of them around, you know, patient communities as well, certainly.
And we're sitting at, in another way that you can actually network and communicate with people. We're podcasting. You know, I'm not suggesting that everybody suddenly go out and start a podcast. That would be both good and bad for our industry if they did that, because it's a lot of work to start up a podcast. But there is a whole community of people that even now we're finding, surprisingly enough, while we're kind of staying at home and we're not as mobile as we are, people are still listening quite frequently to podcast as streamed audio, on-demand audio, right?
We've seen our numbers continue to go up as far as downloads and things like that. I figured we'd see a dip, and they held steady as all this started back in mid-March. And then here recently, it just kind of spiked almost. People are seeing that as an opportunity to learn, stay connected. I think there's a lot of opportunity for how we network and communicate. And again, whether that's, you know, on some of these social platforms like LinkedIn, maybe there's some more professional ones. We'll continue to see that. And before, they were somewhat of a supplement and kind of the day-to-day, but where these in-person conferences, which again, we'll talk about here in a little bit, have changed at the very least. And so I think we'll see some of this stuff continue to become more mainstream and important for what we do.
Before we get to talking about conferences, I think there's a networking tool that's out there that I've seen a lot of businesses embrace in the last couple of weeks, Reid, which is the webinar. I don't know about you, but I have seen a dramatic increase in the number of webinars that are being put out by organizations that I know and I want to listen to. How about you? Have you seen that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think obviously when it first started, it was content driven in the sense of time sensitive and those types of things, because we were talking about COVID or coronavirus related content. And so we've seen, obviously, those evolve a little bit. I know at Girard, where I work, we were asked to participate in one or two a week there for the first, you know, month or 6 weeks. We even hosted some ourselves, et cetera. So yeah, absolutely.
That speaks to the fact of like, what is a webinar, right? Why would you have a webinar? I think, first of all, from what you said, right, the ones that you were participating in early on were very much time sensitive. You were sharing information that's relevant, that's relatable to the what's going on in the business at that time. And at the early stages of this pandemic, things were changing so quickly, and no wonder. But there are other applications for webinars too.
Obviously, what we've talked about mostly to this point is education-based, but I would say a lot of the folks that I've seen do webinars historically, not during, you know, the last, you know, 6 or 8 weeks, but a lot of people do it for lead gen. It's a business development mechanism.
For sure. And oftentimes it's both educational and lead generation for organizations to not only, you know, share relevant information, but do it in a way where if people are interested, maybe it's carrying on the conversation further, they could do that through these platforms. The other thing that's kind of summed up with the main purposes of a webinar, all of those things support the overall brand recognition. It overall supports what you're trying to do from a branding and marketing perspective in the industry itself. But why? I mean, why webinars? Why are they such a popular form factor in terms of networking?
One, we like to hear from certain people. That's why people have guests on, you know, notoriety, if you will. So we've got somebody in the industry that's well thought of. They come on and talk about a particular subject. So you couple the idea of we've got somebody really smart that I'd like to hear from and a topic that I'd like to know more about. That sounds interesting. Typically, if not always, they're free and like during lunch. And so it's easy, right? There's not a lot of hurdles, if you will. much like a conference, the same reason you go to conferences, a big piece of that at least is education. This is a way to do that on a more frequent basis. Typically, again, with ease of accessibility, cost is next to nothing, usually nothing.
Another thing that's very important too is that nowadays when you sign up for a webinar, I know webinars are kind of held at a certain time, but I find myself more times than not registering for a webinar because I won't be able to make it at that particular point in time, but I know that I'll get that link afterward. It's almost like on-demand content.
Yeah, much like podcasting that we mentioned earlier. You know, most people do not listen to podcasts live. There are some hosts, obviously, that have giant followings, more consumer-based podcasts that you can watch or listen to live, but I would say the majority of people, almost all people, listen to it on demand. And some, you know, listen to it as soon as it comes out, that it lands on their phone. But a lot of people, obviously, are going to listen to it next time they're in the car, or next time they're on a trip, or, you know, whatever it is, working out, et cetera.
Although I don't think I've ever watched a webinar while I'm working out. But
no, that's not
the point. But I think all of these things are ways in which we're trying to develop a way to network for the lack of the fact that there are no more conferences, at least for the temporary time being, right? Those conferences were kind of one of the first things to fall at the start of this pandemic. So after the break, let's you and I talk a little bit about conferences and what the state of conferences potentially might be and what that can look like.
Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
We've talked about ways that you can network, communicate, participate, if you will, online, all of which we've done. But I guess the point is it's probably going to become more of a focus or more regular or more systematic or better or I don't know, all of the above, all of which because of what we're going to talk about right now, which is, you know, at least I think it's fair to say where conferences and in-person gatherings are headed is at least unknown. At this point, we've seen an awful lot of conferences, at least in kind of our world or space, canceled because of the timing of year that all of this ultimately happened. We have a lot of conferences in the spring and then kind of again in the fall. And so South by Southwest, HIMSS, the Forum, ones that a lot of people are used to attending, just didn't happen. What's it going to look like going forward? What does that mean? You know, we continue to talk weekly about a virtual conference in June 2nd and 3rd. That's a collaboration between the Mayo Clinic and ShishMed. Just happened to be that one was already a virtual conference, you know?
Right.
So
right.
Is that where we're headed?
I don't know, Reed. I mean, virtual conferences to me seem like, I don't know. There's so many different things between an in-person conference and a virtual conference. It just doesn't seem like it's a like-to-like comparison. You mentioned this earlier, right? Where on Zoom, you wanted to have kind of these sidebar conversations with people while in the Zoom call. One of the things that's really, I find to be very valuable about in-person conferences is having those conversations with people in between sessions, maybe at the expo hall, those sorts of things, you know, where you just run into people, maybe meet them for coffee. When you look at a virtual conference, there's not a lot of ability to do that, at least right now.
Obviously, there's, you know, ways to have side conversations, but you're having to use a secondary piece of technology, platform, equipment, whatever. So at least in most cases, you're going to be participating in kind of a main way. You know, you're basically like watching a webinar, and then you're going to be through direct messages on Twitter or LinkedIn or text messages or whatever, having other conversations, maybe all the above, having conversations with different groups of people. But it's, you know, it's going to be hard to Well, I don't know. Maybe it's not hard. Maybe it's that simple. And the way this stuff is scheduled and built, maybe that's what we'll be doing. It's like, okay, well, now you've got a break. So like, just like in real life, you can go back to your room. You can have conversations with other people in other ways. You can go outside. You can return phone calls.
One of the other benefits, I think, of having a conference and getting everybody together across the country is you're bringing people in from all different places of the country into one place. You're getting out of your workspace to go to another place to network with others in your profession. It's kind of hard to replace that with a virtual thing where you might be streaming in from the same home office that you've been working at for the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, you know, or whatever it may be. It just feels like there's a thing about disrupting you enough to get you picked up out of your workplace and into another place where everybody else is. I'm wondering if you can capture that excitement through an online platform.
The educational stuff, I think you can still capture. You can still deliver the sessions. But to your point, the networking portion, the getting together, the this group's going out to dinner here, and this group's doing this, and this group's doing that, and then we're going to meet back up over here, and you want to have coffee in the morning before the thing. You can do a lot of that stuff, I guess, technically speaking. It's not going to be the same or have the same energy, to your point, you know, and those types of things, I don't think.
Well, let's also talk about the other thing that is important of conferences. And maybe this is the business part of the conference planning that many people realize as sort of like, you know, when you go in person, a lot of that is funded by the sponsors, the organizations that are paying for expo halls. And maybe while you're there, they're paying for these outings where you go have dinner with other clients and things like that. That to me in and of itself is also kind of a challenge because it impacts two things. One, the funding of what a conference really is and how do these large conferences come into play. And then the second part of it is that ability for the vendor community to network and connect with not only their existing clients, but also maybe prospects and bring them together in kind of fun, interesting ways. What are your thoughts about all that?
Again, can you highlight vendors? Yeah, I think so. Not in the way that the expo hall is set up, right? Where here's everybody, go wander around, you know, kind of a thing like that. That's not going to be the case. I think you're going to have probably fewer vendors that get more visibility. The practical way to do it is obviously some of the sessions are sales pitches, basically. You have the regular education and then you've got the paid education, the advertorial, if you will. If that's one way to look at it, there's also, you know, maybe other times that set aside that vendors can, you know, schedule online demos with you individually. So almost like you're stopping by their booth in a respect. It's not really the same. Now, I will say it's probably a more quality connection because, I mean, there's some effort there. Like you've got to give up some information. You're pretty dialed in, right, if you're connecting with a vendor over the internet versus just stopping at the booth and grabbing a stress ball that looks like a nurse.
Well, let's talk about that too, because, you know, as we think about what conferences will look like in the future, you're not going to be able to grab things from people's booths anymore, particularly when we still don't have a vaccine for COVID-19. I think about all the different things that allow for the social setting of conferences where we have the ability to sit next to people in these large expo halls. Well, now we're going to have a 6 feet distance between people or finger foods during the breakout sessions and things like that. All that stuff's going to change. Taking temperatures of people and do we wear face masks? Do we use hand sanitizers? We're not going to get any tchotchkes. If we are, they're going to be wrapped in plastic, right? And we're going to have to take them back and kind of disinfect them before we actually open them up. I don't know. To me, that the future state of what events will look like are really a big question mark to me.
It is. Is that all bad?
Not necessarily. No,
I do think there's a huge downside or a huge negative around the idea that we can't gather in person. There's a lot to be said for that. That's human nature. That's part of how we're wired and built. even, you know, I obviously not shy about my faith and things like that. And so even from that perspective, if you think about churches and gatherings and et cetera, and even biblically, some of the things that are said, there's very little that you can look around and say that, you know, we weren't built to be together and that whole networking component, right? So that is a huge negative there. But again, if I'm a vendor and I'm sponsoring one of these virtual conferences, and it's almost like speed dating, right? You know, I get lined up with 50 different online demos. Well, man, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good deal, really. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it's, you know, I've got X amount of time focused with a person on the other end that's not just here because they could win AirPods or whatever. I don't know. It's interesting to think about.
Yeah, it really is interesting to think about. But what we do know, though, Reed, is that as we are today, right now, we are going to have to embrace ways where we could continually to network virtually, because that, quite frankly, is the thing that keeps going. Luckily, we're in a world where we're digital first and we can do that.
Well, and two, I think the other big problem is even if let's just pretend that the world opens back up. And come August 1st, it's just normal again. And I mean normal as in like last September normal. Who's going to be able to go to a conference? Like, I mean, it's not like, you know, your furloughed marketing staff just rolls back in and is like, hey guys, I think I'm now going to leave and go to a conference. Like, that's just not logistically going to be very realistic, I don't think. Maybe let's spend 2 minutes and just like, what is this? Logistically, how does this work going forward? I'll go first. So my thought is, obviously, we're going to have much more online. Instead of a conference being over the course of 2.5 days, it's going to be over the course of 6 months or a year or 9 months, right? Where like vendors would have a monthly webinar, we're going to have all this kind of more cohesively pulled together in an educational package where, you know, we're not going to sit online for 2.5 days and straight. The quote unquote conference is going to be spread out over a longer period of time. I think that's kind of where a lot of this is potentially headed.
I agree with you. And I also think that large conferences are not going to necessarily be a thing in the future, like thousands of people. I think that if anything, we're going to be talking about grouping together people in a much smaller capacity. So I almost think about the model of like the hospital association state by state, how they have the smaller meeting groups. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to roll into that a little bit slower, maybe even have small little groups. And we can do this online right now where we can have groups of 10, 20 people, maybe 50 people get together and we can learn from what this would look like. I also think there's going to be a fair amount of digital and online in the future. So what that means is you're going to have some online components, and then that might lead to a face-to-face encounter or an in-person encounter, I should say. It's going to be a lot different. And we're going to impose on one another a little bit more of personalization too, because now we're going to be talking to people individually, not just masses of thousands of people. We're going to have to be understanding who we're going to be talking to in these smaller formats. Well, with that, why don't we turn to an interview that I recently recorded with someone by the name of Whitney Cole. She works with an organization called Uhuru Network. She's a strategist there, a digital strategist. She actually runs her own podcast, Reed, and she streams it actually on LinkedIn every day as a way to connect with people. She works really exclusively with B2B organizations. She and I talked about some ways that those organizations can better prepare themselves for what this current, you know, day and age is. And so we'll run her interview right after this break. Welcome back to the Ask the Expert section of the podcast. And today I am so excited to be talking with Whitney Cole. Whitney, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. It's good to be here.
Yeah, Whitney, you and I have known each other. Well, we've got to meet each other online, and you're a fellow podcaster too. I'll let people get to know more about you when you set yourself up with a little introduction to share with our audience, because if people don't know about you, they should know about you.
Chris, we met like a year and a half, 2 years ago. I don't even remember how we met, right? But we were like, we need to be on each other's podcast. And then it took forever. And then you were finally on mine. And then I am now on yours. So it's really exciting. I owned a healthcare marketing agency. So we were a small shop, and we worked primarily with B2B healthcare companies like telehealth companies, digital health companies. And then back in November, I sold my agency to a larger agency, and now I lead the healthcare team at that agency.
Whitney, you work with a lot of people that are actually listeners to our show as well, which are organizations that really provide more of the B2B services. I'm sure that in this day and age with, you know, us dealing with a national pandemic, things have shifted a little bit. Tell us a little bit about what you're hearing from your clients.
So since our agency is larger, my team obviously is healthcare. I deal only with healthcare companies. But we're hearing things from both healthcare and non-healthcare companies. Some are doing really well and thriving during this time. And then others are like, we have to totally change how we do everything. So the way we've looked at it is it seems like there are about five tiers of how companies are affected. Tier one is they are thriving. They are, you know, there's like huge opportunities for them right now. And as long as they're thinking ahead, they can leverage those opportunities into further growth and momentum for their company. Tier two is people are starting to retract a little bit. So they're doing okay, but they're stepping back. They're saying, where can we cut back on expenses? And that's not necessarily a bad place to be in, as long as you're not cutting off growth in the future. Tier three through five are those people who you see they're struggling. Maybe they've had to temporarily close, you know, if they're a location-based business or an event-based business, they have to close down for a few months, and they don't know how long that's going to impact them. So they're doing what they can. They're maybe laying people off, that sort of thing.
We do understand like the impact that this pandemic is having on our economies as well. Do you think that there's a role where you can actually market?
It can feel tone deaf. And if you do it wrong, it is tone deaf. And you've got to be really careful how you do it in the time that we're living. So you can't reach out to people and be like, buy my services, hop on a sales call with me. You've got to be really empathetic to where they are and how things are going to them. And this is a time where you need to be building relationships with people and saying like, hey, we're here for you. The other thing that we've seen people do is provide value even if their customers are hurting right now. So what can you do? What can you give them that will help them be successful? Across the board, we've seen this with companies who have like membership programs online, fitness apps that are free now because people know, the company knows these people are working, they're home, they don't have anything else to do. So let's help them work out. And it's not free forever, but it's like free for a couple of weeks while they're adjusting to this new normal that we're in. Online training courses are kind of doing the same thing. There's some marketing courses out there that are free right now. How can B2B healthcare companies turn that around and do the same thing for their clients? I'm not saying give stuff away for free if it doesn't make sense, but like, where can you provide value that would help your customers be successful right now?
You know, and I've seen a lot of organizations that are supporting hospitals and health systems offering up free tools, like, you know, a local company here that does health risk assessments. They provided a COVID-19 online risk assessment tool for free, right, to organizations. You know, that sometimes can be a little bit difficult if you're a smaller shop, if you're worried about trying to make your numbers.
I think for smaller shops, the way to think about it is, how can we go above and beyond right now without necessarily giving it away for free? So if you're a consultant of some type, is there a way that you can offer a workshop where you can phrase it as, we cover the costs to help your healthcare clients, whether it's hospitals or medical providers or small practices or whatever? Can we do a small workshop to help them figure this out? Or maybe you're not a consultant. Maybe you are a telehealth company with some sort of telehealth product, doing a free call with them to say, hey, how are you struggling with telehealth, and help them strategize to fix it. If you can build loyalty now while people are struggling and people are hurting and people are like, what's going on? Those are going to be your loyal customers down the road. The name of the game right now is deliver value, build relationships, and start building that loyalty among your audience.
You know, I still get people though that even on LinkedIn, I'm still getting solicitations that are kind of like cold solicitations. And I sometimes wonder if those people are just not, you know, aware of what's happening, or maybe those are pre-programmed through their marketing automation systems to, you know, just ping me and they just haven't turned those off. For those organizations that do a lot of outbound activity to try to build relationships, do you have any advice for them about how to maybe start to shift that approach?
First of all, those people that you're getting solicitations from, They just need to turn that off because it probably is automated, right? It just needs to stop. If you have taken the time to know your buyer personas and however you want to phrase them, maybe it's a customer avatar, maybe it's ideal customer prospect or whatever. If you've really taken the time to know them, you likely know what they're going through right now. You know what some of their challenges are. So if you've done the upfront work of really trying to understand your customer, now you need to take that upfront work you've done and say, okay, how is this crisis affecting them? Are they now working from home and they weren't working from home before and they're like struggling to adjust to that? Or maybe if you do serve a healthcare system or hospitals, what are their pain points right now? And so when you reach out to them, instead of that like templated outreach thing that you've always done, you've got to reach out with that in mind and you've got to be asking yourselves, how does this affect them? How are they hurting? Is this even an appropriate time to reach out? Because maybe it isn't. Or if you are reaching out, it's not so much that, hey, get on the phone with me right now so I can sell you something.
I think that's really important. And that also strikes that to that point of being more human in the way that we do work. Oftentimes I think that we forget that business relationships are actually built on that human connection. And we're now in a world where we're not able to interact with people face to face.
If your target audience is like a charge nurse at a hospital or someone who is, they don't have time to listen to anybody else right now. They're trying to keep their patients safe and healthy, and they're trying to keep themselves safe and healthy, and they're trying to keep their family safe and healthy. It may not be outreach now. I think that's where it's going to take some thought and creativity. And if you really know your customer, you should be able to figure out ways to continue to provide value to them. As you're going through your questions like, how are they hurting right now? What are their challenges right now? How can I provide value to them? Those are the type of people you're just going to have to say, okay, we're not going to reach out right now because we know that they're struggling, but is there another way that we can help them solve their problems without taking up a lot of their time?
I think that's critical right there, right? It's just make it easier for them to continue to count on you as a trusted partner. That really sets a differentiator between like a vendor and a partner in many cases, is that you're looking out after their best interests and understanding them better. I want to do a little shift here though, Whitney, because there may be some organizations right now that have a little bit more free time on their hand. I don't want to say that in like a positive way, but you know, business maybe has dropped a little bit for these B2B companies. This is also a good opportunity for them to actually be reflective inward too and start to improve internally.
The way we've been looking at it at Yuhuru is this time is creating a storm. I don't know if that's the best way to say it, but there's a lot of wind happening. If you look at it that way, for some people, it's creating a headwind where if you've ever gone out running in March in Wisconsin, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like you're running and all of a sudden you get headed into the wind and like you run like a 10-minute mile and then all of a sudden you're running like a 20-minute mile, right? Because the wind is just like pushing you back and you feel like you can't keep going. For other people, the wind is coming behind you and pushing you forward. So maybe you ran a 10-minute mile and now you're running an 8-minute mile because you've got the wind pushing you. Other people aren't feeling the effects so much right now, but they need to say, how can we turn this situation into a tailwind for us instead of getting like 3 months down the road and realizing, oh, this does affect us. And then all of a sudden it's a headwind. So what can you be doing right now to make sure that you are moving up into that tier one level of business impact? So making sure that you are taking this opportunity to leverage growth, leverage any momentum you've had in the past. And then also maybe your website has needed to be redone for years and you just haven't had time to do it. Now's the time. Maybe you have been wanting to do like PPC ads for forever, but you just haven't quite figured it out and you don't know how to do it yet. Now's the time to do it. Put someone on like some sort of training course or something and get them started on it.
I hear that some organizations have shifted, you know, some of their team members to be maybe less focused on business development and market outreach just because of the little bit of a lull, and they're now focused on supporting the clients much more.
If there is a way to do that and make sure that you're supporting your clients even better through this time, totally. Like if there are people in your organization who cannot do their job right now because of the times that we live in, how can I use them in maybe a different area? I think that's a great suggestion, Chris.
It's a good opportunity to maybe start to create content that might be more relevant to people. I've read a lot of websites of other, you know, B2B companies that 2 months ago it was great, but now it just seems like there's a good opportunity to maybe refresh it, because after we're through this pandemic, however long it's going to take, things are different and the tone and timbre of how we're communicating about ourselves is different.
Yeah. If you're just putting out the same content that you planned, you know, maybe you put your content plan together 6 months ago or a year ago or whatever. If you're just continuing to put out that same content, yes, that stuff is going to be relevant in a few months, maybe longer. I don't really know, but you've got to adjust to the times and figure out how to get stuff out quickly. This podcast is a great example. We talked about how stuff that was recorded a month or two ago is not so relevant right now. And the same thing for my podcast. Like, I have episodes stacked up and I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I can publish that right now. And so we're trying to figure out ways to have conversations with people and put them on the podcast that are just more relevant for these times.
You mentioned this at the beginning, well, actually before we actually started recording, it's like, you know, what is driving the transformation of your digital? And one of your team members said, you know, is it the CEO? Is it the IT department? Or is it the pandemic, right? That's driving these changes.
Yes, the pandemic, right?
Right, exactly. I think that's an interesting perspective because in times of stress within an organization in times of dramatic, you know, duress that we're under, this could be a really good opportunity to retool.
Yeah, I think we see that happening across the board. I mean, we have clients who were location specific, you know, maybe they didn't have people coming into their offices, so they're not as affected by that, but they worked in a region, they worked in a specific location, they had people coming, they had workers work at an office, and now all of a sudden they have to be remote. And this is something maybe they've talked about for years, but now they're forced to do it. And I think that's what's happening for a lot of companies is they've talked about going digital for a long time. And now suddenly they have to go digital. And I know you help hospitals and healthcare systems with that, especially, Chris. I'd love to hear more. Now I'm interviewing you. I'm getting in my podcast.
Yeah,
but I want to know more about how you're helping people do that right now.
You got to look at what you have. I mean, you know, the good thing is that many of the people that I talk to and work with, they actually have a lot of strengths within their organization. It's just when they're faced with a crisis, sometimes they can lose track of where their strengths are, where the overall goal is, what they're trying to accomplish. We need to use this time to actually be more productive and to be more useful. It's hard to put a positive light on what's happening in the United States right now. It just is. But the positiveness of it, it is driving a lot of transformation. It is driving a lot of changes that I think are going to be with us after this pandemic has hit.
So yeah, I keep asking people, everyone I talk to, I'm like, are we going back to normal? Because I want to know, like, are we going back to normal? I don't personally think so. I think there's a new normal that's coming and things are going to calm down in a little bit and we won't be right back where we started, hopefully, because we've been able to take the situation and become better because of it. But what do you think? Are we going back to normal?
It's hard for me to imagine that because first of all, think about, you know, everybody's working from home now. I mean, or many people are. I don't see how any business in the future can look at this and say, well, look, we've done it for an indeterminate amount of time, maybe 2 months, maybe even longer. Do we really need to have people, a workforce that comes together and maybe they'll reshift and rethink how that approach would work? But I think even more so, you know, within hospitals and health systems, the drive towards digital and using digital as a way to connect with consumers, I think that's going to, patients are going to expect that as, you know, after we're all said and done. Even, you know, I'm sitting here and, you know, I'm doing my own fair share of Netflix binging, right? Of what's on TV. And I sometimes think, wow, you know, I remember there was a time when we actually were able to get together and connect with one another. Are we going to be that way in the future? I don't know. It's hard sometimes for organizations when they think about, like, they're not really sure what the future will be. How can they shift to be there? Thinking about little, maybe incremental ways that you can kind of shift to be in what the maybe the new reality when this is all said and done.
So providing value, we were talking about that. And how do you provide value at this time without necessarily, you know, if we talked about the example of a smaller company. How do you provide value without also hurting yourself financially? One thing we've seen people do is just do webinars and put out a free course or something to help them start using telehealth. And with the CARES Act, there's a lot of expansion for telehealth. And so hospitals, healthcare systems, doctor's offices, they're going to want to know how to use this. And if you have a telehealth product, you are an expert in telehealth. And so putting something out there that helps them be successful, putting a webinar out or something like that, some sort of like training video or something, that is one way to provide value at this time. It does not have to be beautiful either. I feel like we get so caught up in, oh, this needs to be perfect and it's got to, you know, be perfectly produced and everything. Just put something out there. It doesn't have to be beautiful.
It just has to be important and relevant, I would say, right? It doesn't have to be high production. Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of putting out good content and good information, would you mind sharing with people that are listening in a little bit more about how they can find out about you, your organization, and once again, your podcast?
Yeah, totally. Just come join me on LinkedIn. That's where I hang out. I keep most of my connections on LinkedIn. I post content there and my podcast goes there too. So if you want just like one location to find all the things about Whitney and what I'm putting out, that's where you go.
Well, there's a lot of great content that you are putting out and definitely we'll link to it in the show notes. Whitney, I really appreciate you having some time this morning for just to have this conversation. It's always good to talk with people like you. I mean, we're thinking about things in the same ways and it's comforting to know and make that connection, right? Again, we're stuck at home, so this is a great way to build that connection. So thank you for your time today.
Totally. I actually want to thank you because I need to start talking to people outside of my kids and my family right now. I need to talk to adults. So this is good.
Well,
I'm going a little stir crazy.
Well, we all are. I think that is indeed true. And so thanks again for your time.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks again to Whitney Cole for coming on the show. And it's an interesting time that we live, certainly. And would love to hear your feedback on how you think we'll be networking as we move through the rest of 2020 and into 21. And probably just, you know, what that new normal around networking looks like. I'd be curious in what you like, what works for you, what you participate in, we'll be doing more of. Would love to hear. Again, we mentioned it earlier, Mayo Clinic, Shishmed collaboration, June 2nd and 3rd. You can find out more about that over at socialmedia.mayoclinic.org or over on the AHA or Shishmed website. Be sure to check that out. Again, like we've mentioned in weeks past, there is a waiting list, but be sure to sign up and then hopefully they'll open up some more seats. Okay, recommendations. What do you got this week?
Reed, I'm going to recommend an app that I downloaded just recently. When I was growing up, one of the biggest games ever was Pac-Man. That's kind of shows a little bit of my age. Well, they released a 40th anniversary app, which makes me sad to think it's 40th anniversary, about Pac-Man. It includes all of the different levels of Pac-Man that are out there, including Miss Pac-Man. It is an app dedicated to people that are big fans of Pac-Man and also try to introduce a new audience to them. You have the ability to kind of do, you know, like each classic level of Pac-Man and play that if you'd like. You can also, they have different iterations where you could do like a little bit more of a sequence, like, you know, level after level after level of different levels of Pac-Man. And, you know, I just downloaded it, but I'm having a lot of fun. It really brings back the old memories. And the app is called, fittingly enough, Pac-Man, Pac-Man. And you can find it in any app store. And it's totally free if you don't mind ads.
Cool. That's good. Yeah, I'll have to download that. That's a good one. I am recommending something and would love any other recommendations around this, but I'll tell you what I'm doing why I'm recommending this. So I'm recommending Google Photos.
Hmm.
Have you ever used Google Photos?
No, I haven't.
It's free, and I'm using an asterisk after that, and so I'll come back to that in just 1 second. But they do make like an iOS app, for example, for Google Photos. So once you upload your photos, you can just go into the app to navigate your albums and your photos and things like that. In addition, when you do that, when you download the app, it'll ask you if you want to back up your photos to it. So you can use it as a way to back up all your photos you take on your cell phone, you know, and that kind of thing. Your cellular device. But the reason I'm using it, and I'm using it on the desktop predominantly, is because I have an inordinate amount of external hard drives and thumb drives that have photos on them. Typically, it was every time like I would upgrade phones or tablets or whatever, I would just offload all the photos into a folder and just name the folder based on like what phone it came from and the date and that kind of thing. So there's no organization. So I'm trying to figure out ways to mass upload all these photos and organize it so like somebody could actually see them. That's what I'm doing. So again, it is free. if you're willing to let them kind of compress the images, basically, is what it amounts to, that has unlimited space. If you want to keep the original resolution file size, if you will, then there is a limited amount of space, which I'm assuming you can probably buy additional space. It's really well done. I find like kind of a group of pictures that all go together. Maybe it's from like a kid's birthday, for example. Click upload, uploads it. I name the album. It's in there. I can then, because it's Google, much like Google Docs, I can share the album with somebody else that has a Gmail account or a Google Drive account. And so it makes it easier for me to like send my mom an album of photos or, you know, share with like people we went to the beach with or, you know, whatever. It's good. It does the facial recognition and places and stuff like that, much like the Apple Photos do. And you can sort and look at photos that way. And anyway, it's well done.
That's awesome. We'll have to check that out because the biggest thing was you're taking more and more photos. How to manage them, how to share them is becoming ever more important, right?
It's a nightmare, and our colleague and show host, Bobby Ratu, that hosts Intersection Gear and Review, likes to talk a lot about media management. I think there's even some Gear and Review episodes around hard drives and things like that. So if that's kind of top of mind or piques an interest, you may go check out that show. So speaking of, whether it's that show or another, touchpoint.health is the website. We certainly appreciate all the support. You can go there. Learn about the other shows, the other show hosts, sign up for the TPS report, which is our weekly email about all things in the industry that's aggregated by the different show hosts. And so that's a great quick read, comes out Monday mornings. And then please do rate, review, subscribe. We'd love to have you a subscriber. We'd love to hear how you like it. So whether that's over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or otherwise, we do appreciate the support. So Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.